Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday evening. Joining me from Boston, Massachusetts is Timothy Bontemps.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Went to your first Celtics game of the season in the last couple of days.
I did.
Predicting greatness?
Yes. Some people here are predicting greatness, namely the fans. I think everybody else has actually got the right perspective on the Celtics this year.
Predicting pretty goodness.
Pretty goodness, yes, I would say.
That is the one, the only, Van McMahon joining us from Dallas.
Howdy, partners.
I assume you went to see, I know you went to see your Utah Jazz. Because you were taking photos of Gobert's shoes.
Well, yeah, I saw the Jazz JV last night lose a tough one to the mighty Mavs. Luka's in midseason form, and if you're a pessimist, you'd say so is KP.
We're not going to talk about KP on this podcast, and we're not going to talk about Ben Simmons and Kyrie Irving either, and we're not going to talk about the vaccine. At least that's my goal, okay? And
there
much by the time his posts, there will be major news, and I'll feel like a fool, but we're not going to do it. What we are going to do is talk about some of the big questions that we see that are arising for some teams here in the early going of the season. There is other stuff going on. There's 28 other teams besides the Sixers and Nets, and some of them have some pretty significant issues to juggle. And where I wanted to start was with the Lakers.
Oh, man, another team we barely ever talk about. Here we go. Here we go.
I know.
Got to make sure the Lakers are getting enough spotlight. Come on, fellas.
We are. Trust me. I mean, I got a talking to from the bosses. Not enough Laker talk. So
your ESPN bosses are no, I'm not going to make that joke. Go on.
All right. So LeBron and Russ haven't played together yet in the preseason. I don't care about that. You've heard me say on here that I'm not going to evaluate the Lakers one way or the other until at least Christmas. And I reserve the right to push that back as well.
But Ryan, continue not to make any predictions, including during the season, just staying away. No judgments.
One of the things I'm going to be watching for the Lakers right off the bat is what Frank Vogel does with Westbrook and LeBron in terms of playing them together. Mm-hmm. Because I suspect he is not going to play them together that much. And while everybody sits there and talks about how they fit, and LeBron says this, and Russ says that, and AD says this, that he is going to stagger them so that, and moderate their minutes too. And so that one of them is on the court at all times, but the both of them aren't on the court that often. And seeing how they're going to put lineups around them are going to, I think, define a big part of this early season results for the Lakers, Bontemps. And they already suffered a blow. Trevor Ariza had surgery this week and is going to be out for at least 2 months. They need wings. They need shooting on the court. And one way to do that is to have LeBron or Russ off of it to stretch the floor to help LeBron when he's on it and to help Russ when he's on
it. Well, the other way to do it is to play Anthony Davis at center, right? Which is sort of the question that is hanging over this team, which there's a lot of, as we talked about recently on the pod, there's a lot of allusions to Anthony Davis playing center a lot. But until we know exactly how much he's going to play there, it's probably going to dictate how the Lakers look. And I think to our guy McTen's point on, I think, Zach Lowe's podcast earlier this week, if you have DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard on the team and you only have so many guys to play, you kind of have to keep them both engaged. I think you probably do need to at least start those guys, one of those guys during the regular season, just to churn through minutes on the roster.
Do you have to keep DeAndre Jordan engaged? I'm telling you, he's the league's best cheerleader at this point. Well, let him play to his strengths.
The problem the Lakers have is the one Brian brings up, which is that with Trevor Ariza out, you know, people go, Trevor Ariza is 36. He's not that good at this point. Trevor Ariza is a pretty important piece of this Lakers team. They don't have a lot of guys on the wing really who you could trust to play. Mm-hmm. Ariza was pretty clearly, I think, to me, a guy you would look at is if he's right, he would be a closing lineup guy for them. So now you're looking like, you know, now you're down another wing player already. If you're trying to play Anthony Davis at center, now you're playing, you know, two wings with LeBron and Russ to start games, to go through the games. Like, right. It's just going to be really interesting to see what Frank Vogel tries to do, because you're rolling out there Malik Monk, who didn't get a qualifying offer from the Charlotte Hornets, but, you know, is being hailed as, like, you know, it's going to be this huge saving grace for them. got guys like Kent Bazemore's bounce around on minimum deals. And, I understand, and, but I'm just saying.
He have like, some good regular season games, but
sure.
You know, he played 4 years for the Hornets, and they were like, "Yeah, we're not even going to pay him $4 million. Good luck."
Right. They have the Lakers have a whole bunch of guys on minimum deals that they have to try to cycle through these slots to fit around their star guys. And look, the Russ and LeBron
One is Melo, who you know, say what you want. I mean, Melo can talk about he'll take whatever role. He ain't going to be happy if his role is
he's going to play. CDs. Yeah, that's right. He's going to play. So, and then you've got this fit of Russ and LeBron, which let's be honest, like this is the clunkiest fit for him clearly since he played with Dwayne Wade. And when he was playing with Dwayne Wade, those guys were both in a different athletic place in their career than Russ and LeBron are. And, you know, Russ
and Dwayne Wade was a dominant defender.
That's right. But even on top of that, just in terms of the offensive fit, you know, Brian was with those guys right at the beginning in Miami when those guys were at the peak of their powers and they had to try to figure out where they were going to be on the court. And, you know, Russell Westbrook has always had the ball in his hands. And if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he's not very effective. And if LeBron is happy, and LeBron is used to always having the ball in his hands. And like the thing in Miami really took off when it was like, all right, we're going to give the ball to LeBron and everybody else is going to work around him. And, you know, it's, that whole situation is just going to be really fascinating to watch play out where there's going to be a ton of expectations on that team and a ton of pressure on that team right from the beginning. Cause there always is in LA, especially when you got stars like this together. And it's just going to be really interesting with Frank Vogel, by the way, who only got extended for 1 year on his deal. Like there's a lot of pressure there for them to be good and win, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. And you know, we've talked before about, it's probably not going to, like, they're not going to shoot out of the gates. Just the history, LeBron with D-Wade, as you mentioned, with Kyrie, you know, Russ teaming up with Harden was a relatively slow start with Beal last year. But and I do think there's something to be said for you want to stagger their minutes a lot. You want LeBron to be able to be the primary, you know, the guy with the ball in his hands with good spacing around him. You want Russ to be in those situations. You don't want Russ as in particular playing off the ball a lot. The problem is that's all fine and dandy, but they're definitely going to start games together. And if they're not finishing games together, you want to see some overreaction and absolute circus. So, you know, I mean, you're starting them together. That's 12 minutes, first quarter, third quarter, and you're playing crunch time together. So, you know, you're up to 16, 18 minutes per game just with those sections of time where they're going to be on the floor together. So, you know, it's not as easy just saying, well, you know, you're my turn, your turn, you rest, whatever. They'll still be on the floor together a whole lot, and they're going to have to figure it out. And, you know, so much of this comes down to, is Russ finally willing to do something when he has, when he does not have the ball in his hands? Like,
yeah,
because we all know Russ standing there spotting up is a favor to the defense. Like, you know, if he's spotting up on the wing, his man's going to have a foot in the paint and not be in any hurry to get back out to him. You know, can there be some, you know, LeBron Russ pick and rolls or Russ setting screens? You know, will Russ be like, Russ has all the ability in the world to be a really effective cutter, and you can put together a nice little highlight tape. The problem is, you know, the highlight tape is like, those are like the only time he's ever cut, and maybe it's made him more effective. Oh my God, he actually cut the basket. You know, so he's getting dunks out of it. But like Russ just standing around, not going to work.
Well, Russ could be like Bruce Brown was with the Nets, which people might go, well, wait a minute. Like, how are you comparing Russ to Bruce Brown? But like Bruce Brown was able to get a bunch of, like, he got like 8 or 10 points a game, basically just setting a screen, rolling to the basket and catching the ball for a layup.
Yeah. Like, and Russ, obviously,
do you think how many times in his career has Russ set a screen and rolled?
Well, Zach did mention with Mac 10.
We said last year he'd set 19 screens the entire season. 19 ball screens.
His career high for a season was
68, I believe.
Yeah, it was in
something like that.
Somewhere in the mid double figures.
Setting screens for Durant back then, I assume.
Probably.
But again, does Russ, like, Russ makes a lot of noise about all he wants to do is win. Prove it.
Well, so I will say that, you know, Kent Bazemore was an under-the-radar signing for them. He did have a good year last year. He had his the I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't watch a heck of a lot of Warriors basketball. What I did, I was watching Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. But his defensive numbers last year, his advanced numbers and some of his metrics defensively were his best defensive numbers in, 5 or 6 years since he basically earned that contract that he got in Atlanta. And he shot 41% from three. And, look, he's not going to come in and be, a two-way masterpiece. But, they need, so for the reporters who cover the Lakers have said that he's looked good and that the coaching staff and some of the players are talking about him. Like, especially with the Ariza down, like they need Bazemore to play well.
He has to. He's a hugely important piece. And when you have a team where you've basically got three max players and 12 minimum guys or 11 minimum guys and Kendrick Nunn, that's what you're going to have, right?
And no matter how many of the minimum guys have Hall of Fame resumes.
That's right. Like you're making do with, you've got to put it together with scotch tape and figure it out. And that's, what you need in that scenario, right? Is AD to be awesome, LeBron to be awesome, and Westbrook to be awesome. If those guys are awesome, you can have minimum pieces floating around them and make it work. If they're less than awesome, then all of a sudden it looks a lot more complicated.
Well, and you can also have imperfect fits that are overcome just by ridiculous talent.
That's
and,
right.
And, look, Russ might not be a perfect fit, but if he's, if he's just the absolute terror that he can be in transition, he's ripping down 11 rebounds a game and getting them on the run and getting a bunch of easy baskets. Some of the stuff like imperfect half court fits can be overcome. And then,
only if those guys are really good and really good together, it's got to work.
But bubble Anthony Davis can overcome a lot of roster imperfections. Last season's version of Anthony Davis, they need better than that.
He's just such a huge piece too, with his shooting ability. Like when he's playing well, if he can get, he's probably not going to shoot like in the bubble. We've talked a lot about, he was one of the guys who definitely saw his shooting go out to places it otherwise hasn't been, but him playing the five and giving them a floor spacer there, who can obviously do incredible things at the other end of the court too. Like that's going to be so critical to give Russ and LeBron the best chance to succeed together. Like it just, he has to be that top 5 or 10 level player and like dominating for them. And if he's playing like that, then the Lakers are going to be in business. If, like you said, McMahon, if he's closer to where he was last year, it just makes this whole thing a lot more complicated for Frank Vogel to figure out.
All right. Well, let's just watch. It'll be interesting to look at the two man numbers, the two man on off numbers, where how often Vogel uses Westbrook and LeBron together in October, in November, in December. I suspect he's going to, at least early on, try to see how they look apart before. I know everyone's going to watch how they look
together. Like McMahon said, though, it's going to be hard to do that. Like just the way the game breaks down, they're going to have to play half the game together almost automatically. So
yeah.
It's not like you could take Russ out or LeBron out 90 seconds into the game and then bring him back in 5 minutes later.
But Vogel has shown he's not afraid to take guys out, 4 minutes into a quarter.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Is Russ playing 30 minutes? You really think that's happening? Is LeBron playing 30 minutes?
Yeah, he might. Well, 31, 32.
Okay. I believe when I see that they play in LA, but I'm like, I'm standing firmly in Missouri, the show me state.
I love that. That's something my dad used to say. It makes, nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about when I use it. My wife has told me never to use it again, but I'll say I'm from, when something dubious I see, I'll be like, I'm from Missouri on that one. And nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about. It's kind of like I say betting on the come. Nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about.
Oh, family podcast. Let's go.
Okay, so one of the other questions we're looking at here, what happens with the Suns and their two extension candidates, DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges? Now, Woj had a story earlier this week that the Ayton talks weren't going well, and he said that the Suns have been reluctant to offer the max. We talked a few weeks ago.
Reluctant means they sure as hell haven't.
Right, and so – we talked a couple of weeks ago about extension candidates, and you know, we thought that Ayton would really want the max or nothing. And the challenge, if you're Phoenix, is you've got Booker and Chris Paul on your books, and you've also got to take care of Bridges. Robert Sarver has paid the tax before, but he hasn't paid in a decade. He's not.
I was going to say that the challenge for Phoenix is Robert Sarver is a renowned cheap ass. Just say it.
What was the woman who was her name? Greta, who described what would happen with Robert and a nickel and his posterior, I believe. I think they're watching it, and you know, if they saved a couple of million bucks per year on him, it could really be meaningful in 3-4 years. So the thing about it also is that when you look out there at next summer's teams with salary cap space, and of course that could change. There could be teams that midway through the season decide to go for a rebuild and go to dump salaries and all of a sudden become players. But right now you look at the teams, there's not a lot of teams out there that are going to have space. It's going to be one of the lower space summers we've seen in a while. And the team, some of the teams that have them are in kind of big rebuilds like Oklahoma City. I mean,
like Oklahoma City, who, you know what? Yeah, rebuild. So if you can get, what will Ayton be next summer? 22, 23? If you can get a 22, 23-year-old, you know.
But you're not going to get him because the Suns are going to match that contract.
Will they? We'll see.
I mean,
and if you're Oklahoma City, what do you have to lose? But if you can get Ayton and pair him with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you've got $1,000,006 picks to make something happen. I'm just saying, like, it only takes one. And
yeah, DeAndre, but they would match it. They would match it in that regard. They'd match it.
Perhaps. DeAndre Ayton, it's crazy to think that he should settle for anything less than, as you call it, the fun max. And look, here's the thing. Don't talk to me about, well, you know, Sooners a position that's been devalued. You know what? Because Robert Sarver, you passed up Luka to get this guy. So if Sooners such a devalued position, you were a dumbass then. So you drafted the guy number one overall.
I don't know who made the decision, but
obviously I do.
Because he went to Arizona, where Sarver is a proud alum. I do think that was attractive to him.
I have been told by multiple people who were with the Phoenix organization that was a total Robert Sarver move. It sure wasn't Igor.
Igor Kokoskov, who was the coach of the Slovenian national team. He was the head coach of the team. Yes.
Yeah, and very briefly. But at that time, he wanted them, obviously, to get Luka and to put a big offer on the table for Clint Capella, who, ironically, is now one of the leverage points that the Suns have. You know, if you want to make Capella Ayton comps and look at Capella's contract, but look, you draft the guy number one overall. He produces. He's not the primary reason, but certainly a significant reason you go to the finals, and then you don't want to pay him.
I think we should clarify that no one here really thinks that Phoenix is not going to have DeAndre Ayton on the team after this season, right? Do we agree, McMahon?
Right. So why muddy the waters?
Well, but I think to play devil's advocate to your position, if you do look around, I do think it's fair to say that it's not, to me, a no-brainer that you would pay him a max. And if you can get him for 90% of the max, then maybe you get him for 90% of the max. Or maybe you get him for 90% of the max and there's incentives where, say, he makes a couple All-NBA teams or an All-NBA team, then he gets up to the max or something like that. Like, there's ways where
if he makes an All-NBA team, he wants Supermax. So,
well, yeah, but I'm just,
he ain't going for that either.
Well, but I'm just saying, there's ways where you can do this where, like, there's some negotiation on.
Well, what does Capella make? I know he just signed an extension. What does he make?
In the low 20s.
Yeah, 20-ish.
I think it's an average of 22 or 23 a year.
So the projected max for next season, which is where Aiden's contract would start, the fund max is about $30 million. That's where it would start. And obviously, it would go up from there.
Yeah, 5 years, 172 would be the full deal. And if the Suns want to say no player options, all that's fine and dandy. But I'm just
beyond the actual dollars and cents, it's more about do you want Ayton playing this season with that, you know, over his head?
After this guy has done everything you've asked him to do, after he has bought into being a dirty work big man, he's not in there demanding post-ups and clogging up the offense. He's setting screens like a freaking right tackle. He's anchoring. He's running the court hard. He's anchoring the defense. Do you want him out there worried about, oh, I got to put up numbers, I need good touches? No.
Good locker room guy.
Yeah. Well, and this is the other thing that's interesting to your point, McMahon, about both these guys, in that you're talking about two guys who are doing a lot of stuff that doesn't necessarily show up on the stat sheet that you then have to try to translate to what you're going to give him in a contract, right? You look at Mikal Bridges, who is one of the elite young defenders in the league. And, you know, these 3-and-D wing players generally don't get over $20 million a year.
Right.
And so that's why.
And we talk about cutting. He's a great cutter.
Right.
But
right.
Everybody with space next year. Yes.
Well, that's this Mikal is the,
Bridges.
Well, this is the thing. The fun, the fun and interesting conversation to have here is if those two guys are available, I think more teams would pay Mikal Bridges than would pay DeAndre Ayton. So
I think you got to get Bridges done, because I don't think his value, I guess he could have a bad year, I don't think his value is going down.
No.
Everybody needs players like that. So but both of them do a lot of stuff that help you win, that isn't scoring 25 points a game or 28 points a game. It's like you said, Ayton's got so much better at all of this. It's quiet stuff on the stat sheet. He's become a way better defender. He runs the court. He sets amazing screens. He has become he's a really good guy to have around the team. Mikal Bridges
is becoming
the
winning
best guy on the other
foundational
team
piece. He is
That's
a
right.
winning foundational
Both
piece
of those guys.
Drafted number one overall, and you just pay those guys. You do,
right.
Especially he's young. He still has room to grow. And listen, Monty Williams is definitely – I mean, obviously the guy proved himself last season as an elite coach. I think his ability to get players to buy in, to get the most out of players. I'm not saying he's not a great X's and O's guy, but I'm saying I think he is like top of the league in kind of the
guys will run through walls for Monty. And Brian's story about DeAndre last year was really gotten into that, where Chris Paul and Monty were on DeAndre all the time to hey man, we can go places, but you've got to do these things. And by the time he was in the playoffs, people forget, we're just talking about the Lakers. Look, DeAndre Ayton was going not quite toe to toe with Anthony Davis, but he wasn't getting run off the court by Anthony Davis.
He was definitely holding his own.
Right.
Without a doubt.
So
and by the way, I would say he held his own against a guy who deservedly won the MVP.
Yep.
Everybody here would agree, with the exception of Wendy. I'm talking about deserving MVP. But my point is,
saying he shouldn't be disqualified because he missed a couple of games.
My point is, you're really putting a lot on Monty Williams if you don't get this done. To ask DeAndre Ayton to maintain, it's just human nature to ask him to maintain that level of dirty work buy-in and not worry about, you know, the stuff that people traditionally look at, maybe when you're negotiating contracts, not worry about, hey, I got to average 20 plus. I'm trying to get paid. That's asking a lot out of Monty Williams.
Right, well,
it's also asking a lot out of Chris Paul. Do you think Chris Paul, who took a pretty significant haircut this year, you think he's happy about these guys having this situation lingering if it goes into the season?
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
Just that's the thing. You know what I ask as soon as a guy signs a free agent contract, although it's complicated on rookie deal extensions? If Ayton signs for the max, can you trade DeAndre Ayton if he signs for the max?
Yes.
Probably.
And I will say this. I was talking to another GM, and the other GM I was talking to, this was yesterday, actually agreed with the Suns. So it's not a consensus thing, but
I think DeAndre Ayton will get done. I just think the question is, like I said, is it a full max? Maybe. Is it something close to the max with incentives that can get it to the max? My guess is it's probably something like that, and it gets done eventually. I would expect him and Bridges both to get done. But what does everybody think?
I would say they both get done. Done by the deadline coming up here?
I think they'll both get extended before the season. That's not reporting, just my guess.
Do you think Robert Sarver will be kidnapped in the next week and a half?
I mean, I think they're going to have these guys on the roster either way. So I think it's close enough to getting done. It just from like what everybody, well, I shouldn't say close enough. I mean, like people know roughly what I think it's going to take to get it done ultimately, just whether it gets done or not. So,
all right.
I think they'll both get done, but we'll see.
Okay. All right. Next thing we want to talk about is how are the Warriors, a lot of people are bullish on them. How do the Warriors perform / how do they stay competitive, you know, and keep their record competitive before they get Klay Thompson back? And even after he comes back, he's got to be, you know, sort of warmed up and get into it. They know they're going to have Wiggins. He's going to be available. What style of play are they going to have to play? You know, how are they going to have to do that? How are they going to operate? And, you know, this is, you know, they're going to have high expectations for this season.
They're going to operate by saying, hey, Steph, be an MVP candidate again, and please stay healthy.
They did that last year, and they were not a playoff team.
They were competitive, though.
They're going to do two things. They're going to play Draymond Green at center a lot, and they're going to need Jordan Poole to be really good. Now, Jordan Poole, over the second half of last year, was really, really good for them. Down the stretch in those games against the Lakers, against the Grizzlies, down the stretch of the season, we were trying to get into the play-in tournament. Jordan Poole was really good for them. He had 30 points on 10-for-17 shooting in their first preseason game. And with Klay Thompson out, you look up and down this Warriors roster, Steph is going to be Steph. Andrew Wiggins is probably going to score 17 points a game or so because he
Andrew Wiggins always available will be Andrew and Wiggins.
But he's at least always available and plays.
Wiggins always scores.
Right. But he's effective.
For better or worse.
But you look at the rest of the team, there's not really another guy outside of Jordan Poole that you look at that's going to be a consistent scoring threat.
Are you not an Otto Porter believer?
Otto, I think, could be a great minimum signing for them. He's got a chance to really be a good piece, but like, in terms of a guy who's going to go get them 15 or 20 a night, like Jordan Poole is the other guy. Cause like Draymond's not scoring 15 or 20 a night. So until Klay gets out there, like Jordan Poole is a sneaky, really, really important guy in the league because Golden State's going to be putting a ton of pressure on him. And look, anytime Steph's not on the court, the ball's going to be in his hands. I mean, I think it's going to be a lot like Jordan Clarkson was last year in Utah, where it's just like, hey man, you got to just go shoot. Cause we don't have anybody else who's going to do this. And they have a lot of faith in him and they think he's going to be good. And he's going to get every opportunity to take, I think, a really, really big step forward this year if he can take advantage of
it. Yeah. And he did take a huge step last year from basically being a G League player to being a quality bench scorer last year. And they need him, you know, he's 22 years old. Obviously he's still early in his development. They definitely need him to take another jump. Do either of you guys think that either of the lottery rookies are contributors? I would be surprised.
It's just, I mean, on individual nights, maybe. And then they, you know, pretty much, you know, Wiseman's recovery timeline is not.
Yeah.
on the short end.
He hurt his meniscus back in the spring, and he's still coming back to full strength. So
I don't know where you've got to start the season either.
You've got Kuminga dealing with it's not a major knee injury, but him having a little knee injury now doesn't help. Yeah. I mean, it's
no.
You know, that's the biggest thing. Preseason reps he can get.
Yeah. The biggest things there are Draymond playing center and Poole, and them really saying we're going to play Draymond and lean into playing Draymond at center all the time. Like, that's always been the thing they've tried to stay away from to try to lessen the load on him. But I think the fact that they're doing that to me is a recognition of A, you know, mess around time is over. It's time for us to try to win as many games as we can. And they just don't have another option, because when they go big, even with Looney, who's effective with Draymond, their scoring is so limited outside of Steph that it just is really tough when he's not playing with those Draymond at center minutes.
When they
that's going to be huge for them.
Obviously, they had the death lineup for years, but when they spread the floor and play small with Draymond running around playing the two-man game with Steph, they're devastating.
Yeah.
And they're going to need that devastating stuff. And really, to be honest with you, watching Draymond and Steph play with each other,
it's art.
It's you know, it's reached. I mean, again, this is not a new phenomenon. They've been doing it for almost a decade, but it is awesome to watch. And they're gonna need that, of course, as well.
Well, and it's so fun when Draymond's bringing the ball down the court, and you kind of see him and Steph not even really making eye contact, but they know where.
Yeah,
they don't even.
Like, it's not even a play. It's not like It's not like Horn.
It's like the old Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, Tim Duncan stuff, you know. They would just come down and they all knew every set they ran and where to go, and they would just do stuff without even really communicating anything.
I think it's even a higher level than that, because Steph is so much more dynamic with the ball than even Tony Parker was. Parker was great at getting downhill, one of the great penetrators into the lane of all time. The guy would like lead the league in paint scoring, or be first or second league in paint scoring, like year after year after year. But Steph is just such he can go so many different ways, fast, slow, you know, high, low. And it's all up to Draymond to, you know, operate with him, almost like a great wide receiver and quarterback who were like in a 2-minute offense. And the wide receiver looks at the defensive set. He looks at the eyes of the quarterback and they just know what they're going to do. It's very much like that. And it's really amazing to watch, especially when they're in the heat of the game, when they're in their own 2-minute offense. It's like, we just got to get a basket. Let's go to work.
Well, and it's something we've never seen before, because the goal on a lot of these is to get Steph about a phone booth's worth of space anywhere from about 35 feet in. If you give him a phone booth's worth of space at 32 feet, the whole defense reacts to it. And he's still, there's a decent chance he's going to get a 3-pointer off and make it. But even if not, you've got the whole defense scrambling to try to make sure he can't get a halfway decent look from, you know, two steps over half court. And it's just like nothing, you know, I mean, Damian Lillard has some similarities, but again,
what's funny, you know, Lillard and Draymond tried to do it together for Team USA.
Yeah.
And they made an honest effort. And obviously Lillard is amazing, phenomenal, right? They just couldn't. I mean,
it's years of work together.
I know. But the thing about Steph that's so amazing, I've always thought this, and I am no, you know, analyst of shooting mechanics. The angle at which he releases the ball, he shoots the ball pretty much straight up in the air. Makes it very difficult. As you said, all he needs is a phone booth worth of space. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Chris Paul, he is not as obviously as good of an outside shooter, but obviously as Chris Paul has aged and he's not getting by people, you know, people say he's mastered the mid-range. Well, of course he's mastered the mid-range, but what he's mastered is the launch angle that gives him a chance to basically shoot the ball.
So he needs those DeAndre Ayton screens. Those max level screens.
That's max level screens. All right. Other thing I want to talk about is a team that I think has got a lot on the line this year. That's the New Orleans Pelicans. And when is Zion going to come back? And because they need him, bottom line, they need him. When is Zion going to come back? And secondly, not just when he steps on the court, we're talking about a guy who they're being a little bit vague on purpose with his injuries. And they do that to protect him, and also because he doesn't like his business out there. I get it. We don't really know a lot about this injury, but we do know he hasn't been able to work out in a while. And so, A, when does he actually get clearance to play? B, when is he going to be back in condition where he can be the type of player he was last year when he was hoping to get in better condition for this year? And that's right out the window now.
Yeah. Do they have to, you know, is it back to playing him in bursts? How much do they got to manage his minutes? You know, how's he moving? If Zion comes back, you know, looking like he should be playing left tackle, that's problematic.
Well, and that doesn't even get into the fact that he doesn't guard anybody. And, you know, part of, you know, we have talked about this a bunch, at least Brian and I off the pod. I think we've talked about it on the pod too, is like, you go back and watch his highlights from Duke and the thing, and talking to executives around the league, the thing that made him such a special prospect coming in the NBA was not because of his scoring in the paint. It was because this guy was a 6'6", 290 pound or whatever human tornado who was causing all kinds of turnovers and blocking shots and stealing the ball and flying down the other court for dunks. And was like, he was like a supersized version of Draymond in every way. Like that was what,
well, yeah,
that
he was like, he was like a dominant finishing version of Draymond.
Well, that's what I mean. Like that was what made him this incredible prospect. It wasn't that he just bowled his way to the rim and scored. It was, he was doing all this stuff at the other end of the court. And if he just becomes a guy who's not going to guard anybody who then bowls his way to the rim and scores, like he's a talented player that's certainly going to help you, but he's not this transformational, transcendent prospect that he was going to be. And
well,
that to me,
listen, is Luka,
no, it doesn't.
Is Luka a transcendent prospect?
He, well,
listen,
I would
one
say
of the, one of Luka's great defensive abilities is the fact that he's versatile enough where you can hide him on multiple positions.
I would say
is Trae Young a transcendent talent, because he, you know, he ain't stopping anybody. If you are a, if you're a dude who can possibly,
if you're a big
average
guy,
30 a game, if, shooting 60 plus
but if,
percent,
but if you're and
create, if, come on.
No, I don't. I'm not saying he's, I don't, when I say that, I don't say that he's a bad player or not a good player or not a very good player. He obviously is a very, he's already a very good player. But if you're a big guy and you're a zero on defense, that's a much bigger knock than if you're a zero on defense as point guard. That's just the way it is.
Define big guy, because he's their point guard. You know, if you're a primary ball handler who is a basically, you know, this guy's on the floor, you're going to be a damn good offensive team. You know, my point is, if you're a good enough offensive player, it's on the coach and the franchise to build a passable defense around you.
I'm just
would not be the only one in the league.
The farther up the defense, the size spectrum you go on defense, the better you have to be on defense to be adequate. And I'm just saying, if you go back to watch, I'm telling you, go watch the high, like 5 minute highlight.
Oh, no, there's the one that stands out where he came from the paint and blocked a corner three. And it was like the guy was, you know, in my mind, he was like 15 feet in the air
and
swatting in the seats.
That's the stuff. That's why he was seen as this once in a generation prospect. It wasn't because he was going to be this.
Well,
it was both
added to it.
I'm saying it was a huge part of what made him a special player. It wasn't like Luka from the very beginning was a guy who was going to be a transcendent guy on offense who everyone knew from the beginning was going to be limited on defense. My point is the Zion Williamson who was supposed to come into the NBA has not been in the NBA yet.
Yeah, the best prospect since LeBron.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if he needs to go, like, if he wants to get back into that kind of conversation where he's seen as like one of the best players in the league, in my opinion anyway, he needs to become a guy that isn't a giant negative on defense. So far in his career, he's been a giant negative on defense.
And let me ask you this.
But either way, I still don't know when he's going to get out there and be a meaningful player this year. You know, I don't know if it's
true.
He said he wanted to do it on opening night. That's clearly not happening. And, or probably not happening, you know, but that's a thing. They're not good enough, especially in the West, to start the season 3-7.
Also, did they get better defensively by letting Lonzo Ball go in and signing Devontae Graham? Did they get better defensively in the Steven Adams, Jonas Valanciunas swap?
Their rookie out of Virginia, Trey Murphy, has my attention. He went to Virginia. I didn't see him play in college. I don't really watch a lot of college, but I do know. I just checked my notes. Virginia is in the ACC. I think I'm aware. I think they are. They play decent basketball there. Typically, if you do well in the ACC, you know, you're going to be okay. He shot 50, 40, 90 in the ACC last year, which actually for the whole season, but also in the ACC. And then he was really good at summer league. He shot 45% from three in summer league, made the all first team all summer league. And he's made 12 3-pointers in the first two exhibition games. Now, I'm not going to sit here and like say you should go put your money on him for rookie of the year. I'm just saying, we're having a talk discussion about the Pelicans and their troubles. I will just point out Trey Murphy, especially since David Griffin, their GM, is under some fire. I will point out that it looks like with the 17th pick, they might have something. Let's just see. But he has my attention. I just think
He's a guy who is seen as a guy who could be a 3-and-D guy. And they, to McMahon's point, need a lot of D because they got a lot of guys who don't guard anybody. So, you know,
is he left-handed?
I honestly don't remember.
Okay. I don't know either. All right.
good scouting. Is he left-handed?
Well, this is the thing.
He played in the ACC. Don't forget it. He went to Virginia. It's in the ACC. Don't forget it.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I openly admit I am no Mike Schmidt, Jonathan Givony. When they get to the NBA, I evaluate them. Do my best.
No, he's got a chance to step right in and play a big role for them. But I was half kidding, but like, look, he is a guy who was seen as a 3-and-D guy who could step in and play in the draft. And like, look, that's what they need. I mean, like McMahon said, they traded, Eric Bledsoe and Lonzo Ball and Steven Adams are all defense first players in a lot of ways. And they replace them with Devonte Graham and Jonas Valanciunas, who are offense first players on a team that already had trouble guarding people. So,
right.
You know, It's going to be a very interesting challenge for first year coach Willie Green to try to figure out what to do with a very complicated roster. And that's without even waiting to see when Zion's going to be fully back to normal.
And different players are different. I mean, you can't say across the board, but Tony Bennett has sent some guys into the NBA who have been sort of overlooked and been like, whoa, look at this guy. He, you know, even though they play a very different sort of old school system in Virginia, he's got some victories, you know. Look at Brogdon and Joe Harris, just as two right off the top of my head.
Yep.
Former Mavs first rounder Justin Anderson. Oh wait. Sorry.
All right. My bad. So
you had some momentum going.
The last one we wanted to I mean obviously I'm not trying to say I know anything about the draft. The last one I wanted to ask you guys about before we wrap this up is the Bulls. The Bulls expected to take a big leap forward this year. And they've got a lot going for them, but one of the things that's going to be a challenge from day one, we talked about it when they made those signings in August. How are the Bulls going to defend? What are they going to do from day one? What sort of habits are they going to have? And Bontemps, this is, I don't know if it's one of the biggest questions in the East this year because we've got situations in Brooklyn and in Philadelphia maybe playing out right now. But if the Bulls can defend at even a marginal level, if they are a top 20 defense, they are a lot different than they are if they're a bottom five defense, which is what their personnel might suggest.
Yeah.
And watching them, not that they're going to be defined in November, but watching how they defend coming out of the gates, it's going to be an important harbinger of how this is going to go.
It's going to be hugely important for them. And look, we talked at the beginning of this pod about the Lakers and about the position that Frank Vogel is in trying to figure out how to make not only Russ and LeBron fit, but also trying to figure out how to mix and match these minimum players to kind of make this team go in the way they need it to in LA, particularly another team that they have to try to figure out how to guard people to the level that Frank has always had his teams guard there. This is all really on Billy Donovan. They basically gave Arturis Karnišević gave him this roster and said, all right, it's your job to coach up this defense and get it to a passable level. And, people can point to Billy's track record. I think his teams have always been in the top half of the league in defense. I think they've never been lower than 13th or something. And, it's going to take a heck of a job to get the Bulls anywhere near that level. Cause like we were talking about trying to stutter, stagger the minutes of like Russ and LeBron with the Lakers. Mm-hmm. When you've got DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine and Nick Vucevic trying to figure out how to have those guys on the court in some combination where you can have enough defensive players around them to make up for their weaknesses is going to be a really delicate balance that they're going to have to try to walk all year. Cause the weird thing about their team is they have this starting lineup with those three guys, And then they've got this bench unit with Alex Caruso and Derrick Jones Jr. and Troy Brown and all these guys who are sort of defense first guys. And they don't really have a great mix of two-way guys at all. And so it's going to be a real interesting jigsaw to see Billy Donovan try to put together. I mean, look, if you watch the Cleveland game the other night, they won by like a billion against the Cavs, who look like they're in line to have another pretty rough season. but I don't take a ton away from that. But to your point, Brian, the East is, there's 12 playoff caliber teams in the East, and the Bulls spent all this money and traded all these draft picks because they think they're going to be back in the mix, being out of the play-in tournament again. And if they're down also in the play-in tournament or below still, there, they could be in a lot of trouble.
There's still a tampering investigation going on out there.
And there's a max, and there's a star player on the team who Brian has talked plenty about, who is going to be a free agent in about 8 months also.
But I'm just saying, if they get hit, if they get dinged with something coming out of this tampering investigation, and maybe they'll get fined. I don't know. I think the Bucks got fined and had a second round pick. I don't know. I mean, I would suspect it would be worse, because in the Bucks situation 2 years ago, they didn't get the player, but the Bulls did get the player. But it just, it raises the ante on what they paid to get Lonzo, which is, you know, players and picks, you know.
And I'm just, my thing with the Bulls, like, listen, could I see him being some sneaking into the sixth seed? Sure. Okay. Because I mean, I think they're going to be a really damn good offensive team. Like, they will light it up. I would be absolutely shocked if they win a playoff series now or any time in the near future. And so to give up everything they did in terms of draft capital to be a team that is going to be, they hope one and done.
Let's do this real quick. Are they better than Brooklyn? No.
No.
Are they better than Milwaukee?
No.
Are they better than Atlanta?
No.
Are they better than Philly?
No.
Are they better than Miami?
No.
Are they better than Boston?
They probably think they might. They probably believe they could be better than Atlanta.
No, but one of those teams.
They probably believe they're better than Boston. Okay. It might not be, but I'm just saying.
Well, Mann has said no to all six of those, Brian. Are they better than any of those teams?
No, but I mean, one of those
teams. No, I'm asking the other guy who never likes to make any predictions. Are they better than any of those teams, Brian?
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Silence speaks volumes.
I'm not as high on Boston as everybody else is.
I'm not high on them. I think they're a six seed.
Me too.
So the point is, they
could be better than Boston. And so depending on various factors, they could be better than Atlanta, but I wouldn't say.
But you wouldn't bet in either sense. You wouldn't bet on Chicago to be better than them, right?
No, I wouldn't.
So the point is that maybe they could, like you said, McMahon, maybe they could squeak into the five or six, maybe. And that's before getting into teams like Indiana and the Knicks and the Raptors, all these other teams. So, like, they've put a ton on the line, Charlotte, to be good this year. And they are expecting to be good this year. And so, it's going to be up to Billy Donovan to figure out a way to make this team guard, because they should score. But if they're giving everyone back at the other end, it doesn't matter. And that's what's going to determine how good they are.
If they are somehow an average defensive team, Billy Donovan deserves Coach of the Year consideration.
Well, the issue is,
I would agree,
people will target Vucevic in switches. They will target DeRozan in switches. Mm-hmm. LaVine has terrific athleticism and has improved defensively, but
they will be targeting Zach LaVine in switches also.
He falls asleep on things. He doesn't always be in the right place at the right time. Lonzo has shown he can do some things defensively.
Yep.
But he's not an elite defender.
Well, and the other
Pat
thing
Williams
is
hurt again.
Well, and Pat Williams
Patrick
also.
Williams is hurt.
Patrick Williams is super young. Had a, you know, as a young rookie who had a lot of, you know, was not that great last year. And now he has got to be he's got to take a really big jump for them too. He's the only guy they have that can really guard bigger wings.
Do we
on the
know
roster.
When Patrick Williams is going to be back?
Yeah, Patrick.
Just sort of,
they need to be then, Patrick. They need him to be Tony Allen without the root canals.
They said Patrick Williams was out 4 to 6 weeks, and I believe the injury happened in mid-September. So I guess there's a chance he could play opening night. I think it's more likely he's back around November 1st.
Okay. So it's not like a grade 3 ankle, 8 to 12 week type thing.
No, they said it was 4 to 6 weeks, and I think it happened before camp started. At least I think that's what they said. So, but either way, you're talking, you know, maybe he's ready at the start of the season, but he hasn't practiced for the whole time. You know, I mean, either way, he's got to work his way back in. They don't have guys behind him to really play the role he's in. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be, they're probably one of the teams I'm most interested to watch this season. I just think they're going to be, I mean, they're going to play a lot of fun games.
By the way, DeRozan had a great offensive season last year. Nobody really watched it outside of San Antonio, but
he's become
numbers,
a terrific passer, a really, really good passer.
Yeah. He can do a lot. I don't want to just focus on what he can't do because he's got a lot going for him.
Well, and to be clear, the reason
I think
85
million, I think 85 million was a little bit higher than I thought he'd go, but you know,
and they gave up stuff to get him.
Right. Yeah. The reason we're talking so much about the things they can't do is because we all agree their offense should be really good. Like, if their offense isn't really good, then they're going to have problems. Like, with Zach and DeRozan and Vucevic, they should be a really good offensive team. The question is, like, if they're going to be a good team, it's because they guard people. And that's the thing nobody's sure they can do. Everybody thinks they're going to score.
I mean, they could be a top five offense, top bottom five defense, and nobody would be surprised.
Yes.
And what does that work out to? 41 and 41.
Nick Vucevic is a big NBA podcast fan. So, Nick, if you're listening, good luck to you this season. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you.
Hey, what was USC's defensive rating when he and DeRozan played together? We got to look that stuff up. I bet you Schmitz would know off the top of his head.
He probably would in USC. I could say something here, but I won't. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Everybody have a great weekend. We will speak to you early next week. Take care.
Adios, amigos.